I am here in studio with State Representative Joan Moschino of Hull. Thanks so much for joining us and fighting through the snow to get here today. We appreciate it.
Oh, I love the first snow of the year.
Oh, wow. You've got red on, and so do I. It's like we coordinated our outfits here. A couple things I wanted to talk about, and I love the way you come in and give us an update on what's happening with in your district and what's happening in the State House. Right now in the legislature, it's what they call informal session.
Correct.
And I know we talk about this a lot, and it's inside baseball because we follow politics. But for people that are not quite clear on that, tell our listeners what's the difference between formal session and informal session and how long it lasts.
So as any organization, right, we have rules, and the rules are your friends, and you need to know how to use them, both to sort of defend and to accomplish. But we have our rules, and one of the part of the rules is when we meet as bodies, both and the House and Senate have slightly different rules, right, for themselves. But it's part of what the rules say is when we meet as bodies and what kinds of things we can take up.
Mm-hmm.
So most recently, I'm sure everyone's been following in the Globe and other news outlets about the closeout supplemental budget.
Right.
And what happened was, as part of our rules, we transitioned from formal session, when people come in and there's notice and all of those pieces, to take roll call votes. We transitioned from that, and we always do it every year this time, just before Thanksgiving, into what's referred to as informal session. Now, don't make any mistakes. Everyone's like, oh, you're on vacation. No, there is a ton of work that still can be done during these informal sessions. And in fact, I had a few home rules come through the House and get passed and moved on to the Senate, et cetera. And there's a lot of work. But what it says is how you do it and what kinds of things can pull forward. So the just using the closeout supplemental budget, what ended up happening with this one was we didn't quite agree between the House and the Senate by the time we concluded formal session.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean the work stops. What happened was it all continued, and they found consensus, and they found resolution between the versions of the House and the Senate. The question was how to then move it. And they can still move things like that during these informal sessions. The catch is that if one person objects, then nothing goes forward because mm-hmm. the whole body isn't present. So that was what happened, was it took a while to reach consensus, and then one person objected. And so there was more negotiations to be had. That was actually happening, really was a lot of robust discussions and negotiations. And then what you ended up seeing was the under the rules and the procedure, our Republican colleague had objected. And what he did was he questioned whether we had a quorum, and we must have quorums to conduct these business in these things if there's an express objection. And so what we ended up doing was I think it was like 98 Democrats ended up coming into the building, and instead of taking what you usually hear us do, is which is roll call votes where you see how each person votes, we did what was called a standing vote. And so when they questioned the quorum, there was a quorum present, because they actually, just like a town meeting, everyone stands up and they count. And then they moved forward on to adopt the conference report. And so at that point, what they did was they said they asked for a vote. Usually it's a yays and the nays, and they doubted that it was a yay. So they said, all right, everyone stand up and take what's called a standing vote, just like a town meeting. Mm-hmm. And they go section by section and they count. And it ended up being 98, I think, to 14 or 15. So it passed.
Right.
And then we move forward.
So then when there is a quorum, it would negate that idea that one person can object and stop that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I think that's what a lot of people were not clear
right.
on. Another question, I know sometimes you guys...
Because you have to have the quorum to take the actual standing vote.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, what I know some people think, okay, we're coming to the end of the calendar year. Well, that means everything that didn't make it signed into law, it's gone. But that's not it at all.
No, we have a two-year legislative cycle. So we're sworn in the first January. We form our committees, we choose the speaker, we choose the Senate president, and we start to assign bills. You file your bills, you start mm-hmm. and they get assigned to committees. We are literally just wrapping up the last of the committee hearings. Every bill gets a hearing. So So don't forget, I literally just testified yesterday in judiciary about that access to justice for the disparate impact sort of for the environmental justice just yesterday. And right now what's happening is I know people, they think because we're not meeting formally, there's still a lot of work being done. Mm-hmm. People are really trying to work with committees and chairs to address language and bills and see what's going to move this year. The first big deadline that comes up is Joint Rule 10, and that's at the beginning of February. So even though we're coming into the end of the calendar year, our formal session goes through January of that second year. So we have until January 31st of 2024 to move all of our bills during the formal session. And then we have until next December 31st to continue moving things in informal session. Now, there are certain rules around that, too. You can't vote land. You can't vote, you know, things like that. There are mm-hmm. certain things that require roll call votes. But, you know, you everyone knows those rules, and we all know what to watch for, and we're advocating for our bills.
Sure.
And it, right now, we are transitioning into the art of moving your bill.
Absolutely. And, you know, for just to put it into perspective, I believe they file at least 5,000.
Oh, I think it was closer. I think it was more like 7,000 bills this year. It's a tremendous number. And don't forget that, you know, a lot of that is the home rules, you know, mm-hmm. the things that come from our town meetings or from our cities and towns. I was just doing one for Cohasset. They're swapping out a piece of land so they can solve a public safety problem, put up a cell phone tower, work with Verizon to do that. So we got it through the House. And now it's on to the Senate, okay, because they're bicameral, so it has to do both. So there's a lot of those kinds of bills that are small, that are unique to the districts or to the towns themselves. But, yeah, it's a tremendous number.
Right.
And every bill gets a hearing. And even if you have late file bills, those all get hearings, too. So you'll see us continue to do the committee work even through right to the end of session.
I want to talk with you specifically about two bills, and these are things we've followed here just because there seems to be a lot of public interest in them. And one of those was about fees for streaming services, since more people are cutting their cable, and that's cutting the funding for a lot of cable, local cable access, which is a great news resource. And I know that most news organizations are behind, you know, please don't put another nail in the coffin of local news. And what kind of progress is that making?
So we had a great hearing sort of late spring, early summer, and it was really, I think it was in July. And I'm telling you that the local community PEG channels, they came out in force, really did a tremendous job, both talking about the work and the value, right? Because it should be relevant, mm-hmm. and it really is right now. But also how their funding works, and really talking to the committee about what they really need, and it is this simple. A dedicated, steady stream of funding. So what the bill proposes is just 5% on the streaming services, just like we do with the 5% on the cable bills we knew now. And it's just saying, you know, you're reaching all of our customers, you know, through the rights of ways, and so you should be paying. You should also be supporting the communities and their local programming. And of course, we all know about the news deserts right now. So, mm-hmm. So everything I'm getting is we're interested and would like to do something. And as sort of apropos of my earlier remarks, we're working with the committee right now to see what the language of the bill looks like, the timing, how we might move something forward. It's the art of getting your bill forward. And I have to give some real nice thank yous and shout outs to our local community media centers. You know, Marshfield in particular.
All right.
John Grabowski has done a great job, and he is just like such a strong partner. PAC TV down in Plymouth, mm-hmm. Harbor Media TV, they have just been right there every step of the way, organizing, putting in the good testimony, putting in, getting people forward.
They put out a great product.
Oh, they're
fantastic.
You
haven't checked out Cable Access, it's not your mother's or father's Cable Access,
yeah.
Especially, I'd say, an evolution within the past 15 years. And we try to partner with all the local cable media whenever we're doing political forums, things like that. So that's why I'm very interested in that. And again, don't want to put another nail in the coffin of local news.
Yeah.
We had a young woman in here earlier this year who had worked with you to put together legislation that would enable people who would be legally old enough to vote in the, I guess the general election, but wouldn't be old enough to vote in the primary. And they wanted to help be part of that. And that was Samantha Bevins from Hingham. And she was a very well-spoken young woman.
I believe she's fantastic.
Still at Dartmouth. What kind of headway have you made on that bill?
So, again, we're having that conversation right now with the Election Laws Committee. And my point to them was, I think these young people have made the case. This came from them. It was their idea. They did the research. They showed other states where it's worked just fine. It's a small group. It's really an eligibility, a voter eligibility bill for this small group of young people who happen to just, you know, miss that their birthday falls between the primary and the general. I think that they're actively considering it. So again, it's the art of moving it forward, and that's the conversation we're having right now. But I will just pause and say that Samantha Bevins has pulled together this amazing team of young people who are just fantastic, and they got press. They have done research. They have gone in there. I think they've made the case, and I say kudos. I really love this generation that are coming out of high school and college right now. I think they're going to solve.
I get exhausted just hearing about all their accomplishments.
It's fantastic.
Pretty amazing. Anything else you want to add about anything you're working right now at the end of the year that you want to share with our listeners?
So we're continuing to do all of the climate change. I mentioned the Access to Justice bill, which is just about getting standing for people to make a disparate impact claim in state court. And what that is just, you know, if government's doing something that has an adverse impact on, you know, your civil rights, that you should be, even if it wasn't intentional, it's about what was the impact, not about the intent. So that's a really important one we just testified on. We were also up, right now is COP28 over in Dubai. They're doing the big climate summits. And we were visiting with students at UMass Lowell and the RIST Institute, and they actually got invited. They got credentialed. They're the only public college students that have credentials to attend COP as participants. Off the charts, fantastic. The work that these kids are doing and the studies and the research. And so we got to go up there as part of the Telecom Utility Energy Committee to visit with them, talk about what the state's doing, talk about what they might bring to COP. And then we asked them to circle back with us so that we can hear what they bring back from COP28 to the state legislature. So that was really fantastic. The other thing I want to do is just to say, give a shout out to Hingham firefighters. The 16 firefighters who were the first responders to the Apple Store just got acknowledged by the governor and the state for the Firefighter of the Year Awards honor. And I wasn't able to make it to the actual event where they were awarded. And I know the selectmen in Hingham did also honor them. But I just, boy, our public, our first responders and our fire safety, I got to visit with them while they were training recently. And I have to just say, so well trained, so impressive, just.
And compassionate.
And compassionate, you know. They're ready to run into the building. They're the first responders. When you see them with our elderly, it's really a huge shout out to Chief Murphy and his team, and quite frankly, all of the firefighters and chiefs on the South Shore.
That's great, and we appreciate you joining us again. That's State Representative Joan Moschino, just giving us a little bit of an update, and we appreciate you joining us today here at the getting toward the end of the year. Happy holidays to
Happy
you and
holidays
your family.
To you and to all your listeners.
Thank you. I'm Christine James, 95.9 WATD.